Welcome to Your Life Reset, a Virta Health podcast series. I'm your host, Teresa Link, and in this series, we'll hear from people on their Virta journey, the wins, failures, moments of adversity, and moments of joy they're experiencing along the way. So sit back, relax, and listen as we unwrap the truly human experience of Virta.
Hey there, listeners. Welcome back. Today, we are diving into the ultimate macronutrient hero, protein. We're talking about how it helps with everything from shedding pounds to building muscle, maybe even improving our longevity. If you've ever wondered if protein is that secret sauce to helping you feel your best, you're in the right place. Today, we'll tackle questions like, could loading up on protein really help with weight loss? Can it mess with my kidneys? And do I actually need those protein shakes and supplements? We'll cover that and a whole lot more. We've got a superstar guest in the house today, Dr. Jim Lanzalotti, certified trainer and sports nutritionist with a master's and PhD in nutrition. And his favorite thing to talk about, you guessed it, the power of protein. Jim, I couldn't be more pumped to have you on the show. Let's get to it.
Thanks, Teresa. I appreciate being invited.
Yeah. So, Jim, first question, does boosting protein really help us drop those pounds, or is it just hype?
Definitely not hype. I think we probably have over 200 studies showing the benefit of protein. A lot of times we think about protein and we immediately think, oh, it must be muscle. But every organ of the body uses protein. And I think it's really important to think about protein as that lever. We can go lower carb, we go higher carb. Obviously, we're very focused on a lower carb approach, but the key is really that lever in the middle. Having protein is the balancing of everything that we do from a systems biology standpoint. So definitely not hype and a key to so many of the goals we're trying to achieve.
How does that work? How does it work in being able to really help us achieve better weight loss?
Absolutely. The way I like to explain it is protein feeds the muscle and starves the fat. Although we don't believe in counting calories, calories count. They matter. So protein is four calories per gram. But when we digest it, believe it or not, we actually burn a lot of that energy off. So anywhere from 20 to 30% of the calories from the protein gets burnt off just in the process of actually utilizing it. So when we think about trying to have a structured diet where we're not eating too much, protein actually does a really nice job of giving us a certain amount of fullness. And I'm sure we'll get into a little bit more detail about satiety or not being hungry, but protein gives us that greater satiety with less calories. Again, we don't want to count calories because calorie counting just hasn't worked. We've had decades of experience of that. We don't also want to be hungry, and protein gives us the best of both worlds. It gives us that lower calorie choice, but also giving us that fullness, that satiety, that ability to say, yes, I'm good. I can walk away from the table and I'm probably good for the next 3, 4, 5, and even 6 hours.
I heard you say something about we burn it off. Can you go more into that? Do we burn off protein better than other macronutrients, or how does that help aid us with weight loss?
Absolutely. So when we eat protein, we're eating protein, but what we're trying to do is we're eating the components of it, which are called amino acids. And we don't want to get too far in the weeds. I know some of your listeners probably would love to do that. But I think when we break down the protein, that process of breaking it down and turning into its core components, the amino acids, which is what every organ of the body uses, we are going to burn energy. It's a very difficult and challenging process for the body to break that down and to utilize all those different 20 amino acids. And when it's doing that, it's literally burning in. So that 4 calories, or if you had a situation where you had 100 calories of protein, after that whole process takes place, it's probably closer to 75 calories.
So it takes more work for our bodies to process protein versus some other fat and carbohydrates, which is what I'm hearing from you.
Yep, absolutely. And that's a great point. And so fat is actually easy for the body to process and use for energy. And the body's very efficient at using fat, probably more efficient than any other source of energy. So of that 100 calories of fat, about 97 calories are still available for energy. And that's, again, that's why fat is such a great energy source. It's very thorough and very effective and very efficient energy source. Carbohydrate, there are about 4 calories, but the body processes those very easily. So that 4 calories is much more close to 4 calories at the end of the day.
Gotcha. So it's like I'm working harder. It's like I'm exercising harder. I'm burning more energy to digest that protein. Okay, that helps me make sense of it. I heard you mention satiety. So let's talk more about that. You know, we always hear that protein can help us stay full. So is it really better than other nutrients in terms of helping us stay full? Or are we kind of imagining that?
Absolutely. So the one thing that I think often gets confusing is protein has the greatest satiety, but fat has fantastic satiety in itself. And what happens is when we put protein and fat together, you know, think, you know, meat, think fish, think eggs, think cheese, that is really the combination of the greatest satiety. So protein gives us the greatest satiety with the least amount of calories, but fat's also very effective as a ability to make us feel full and satisfied and not hungry. But when we put those two together, protein and fat, you know, a ribeye is going to have more satiety than a flank steak. A whole egg is going to have more satiety than an egg white. And don't get me wrong, you can get really good value and satiety from an egg white, from a lean protein. When you put the protein and fat together, you do get that greater satiety. And that really that ability to say, okay, I'm good. I can make it from breakfast to lunch. I can make it to lunch to dinner. I can make it to dinner to the next morning without feeling that need to snack, which is really a very beneficial in terms of those that are on a weight loss journey.
So the ribeye is a higher fat cut of meat, right? And the flank steak is lower fat. So you're going to have more satiety, more fullness from the ribeye. I think a lot of people would be excited to hear that, actually. Who doesn't?
I certainly am.
Who doesn't want a ribeye? And then what about, you know, you mentioned other, you can add other fats to protein sources. So would you say you get greater satiety if you are having, you know, the whole egg with the yolk that has more fat cooked, you know, in butter versus a, you know, microwaved egg, you know, egg white, which I'm not sure how good that sounds. But like you said, you could get some good protein quality from that, although it may not fill you up quite as much as if you had the yolk and maybe cooked in some a pan with some butter. Is that
fair? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you're making a great point, Teresa, is that when you think about whey protein, it's kind of like really, it's pure, almost pure protein. It doesn't have a lot of fat. When you have a whey protein shake, you're probably not going to be as full as if you add some heavy whipping cream to it. I mean, Doug Hilbert, one of our senior health coaches, you know, talks about all the time, you know, trying to make that shake more like a meal. There's a product, again, we're not affiliated with it, but it's called Health Code. It's Dr. Bickman. I think a lot of your listeners probably follow Dr. Bickman as well. He has a product, and what he balances is the protein and the fat. When you put those two together, you get greater satiety, you get things that are much more like nature. And I think that that's a really important point is protein alone will give you satiety, but when you get that combination by making sure it's not just the protein, and Teresa, another great point is if you're having a egg white omelet, some extra butter is going to help bump that up a little bit. I typically wouldn't encourage that, but if you had like 3 whole eggs and maybe 3 egg whites, that's a nice combination as well. Just trying to make sure that you're balancing out fat and protein are meant to go together.
Gotcha. And you mentioned protein powders. We're going to talk a little bit more about supplemental protein later in our show today. Thanks for helping us understand how protein can help us aid in weight loss through helping us be full and also how it takes more work for us to actually digest it. I think that's really helpful. I want to switch gears just a little bit. You know, protein kind of gets a bad rap sometimes in a few different areas. One of them is the kidneys. So can you clear up this, you know, too much protein will mess with your kidneys type of myth that we often hear? Well, I don't know. Is it a myth? Is it not a myth? You tell me.
Yeah. Yeah. So some things, you know, die hard. I think you're talking about 30, 40 years ago, there was some evidence that maybe this was a concern. Since then, again, you know, I think we should preface, Teresa, that we're not your doctors. We're not, you know, I'm not an MD.
We are not.
You should obviously, you know, speak to your PCP or your nephrologist. But, you know, a healthy kidney has no problem with a higher or a protein-centric approach. The World Health Organization has shown this. There's been a number of big studies that have shown this. Think about it as exercise for the kidneys. It's just like we, I think, you know, probably decades ago, we thought that exercise wasn't a good idea because the heart rate increased and that was not good for the heart. Turns out it was the exact opposite. It turns out very similar situation. The kidneys, most of our organs, they like actually being worked, and we want to make sure that they're involved in activities or their social, their dynamics in terms of how we function as a human being. So in terms of protein being bad for the kidneys, if anything, it's the exact opposite. But if you have any kind of chronic kidney disease, or you're under the care of a nephrologist, or your PCP has mentioned anything, one of the things that we do at Virta is it's really great. We have your lab. So before we're ever recommending increasing protein, the coach, the provider, your team is looking at your labs and making sure that you're not in a situation where you have chronic kidney disease, where we might want to be a little bit more cautious around protein. But to really try to simplify your question, higher protein, if anything, is beneficial, not detrimental to the kidneys.
I'm just, I'm picturing in my brain now this kidney going to work out, lifting weights on the chest. And how that's, you know, it's what protein helps do for it. Anyway, I'm going to go back to reality and out of my imagination here. If we're hitting the gym, speaking of working out, if we're hitting the gym or we're trying to, let's say, build some muscle, how much more protein do we need to fuel up with?
Yeah, great question. The thing that I like to talk about is Virta's nutrition, our nutritional approach. You know, when you think about our founders, they were all athletes. They were very focused on protein for, you know, an athlete. And I think the one thing I like to message is if you are not currently hitting your Virta targeted protein or the protein target that you have in place, and then you add exercise, yes, I think you have a potential. But if you're hitting your protein target, if you're a woman, and again, I'm talking about, you know, more normal weight, and you're getting, you know, 90 to 110 grams of protein, you know, 13 to 15 ounces, and then you add exercise, you're probably perfectly fine. But if you're below that threshold and now you're adding exercise, I think you are doing yourself a disservice. So I don't like to just tell people, oh boy, you added exercise, go chug a protein shake. Typically, if you're hitting your protein target before exercise, you're probably getting more. And I'm pretty comfortable with the protein targets that we set with Virta that you're getting enough protein, even for exercise. But if you're not hitting that target, now you've added exercise, definitely something you want to double down and talk to your coaching team about.
That's great advice. I think I see all over, you know, social media, influencers. Lots of times it's these incredibly bulky people as well that maybe are doing, you know, competitions or something. And that really just doesn't speak to the vast majority of the population that is probably just trying to do a little bit of movement to feel their best. So it's good to hear we don't have to load up on tons of supplements and, you know, just drinking egg yolks and all of that. I think about that, and it just it's so gross. So I'm glad to hear. We don't have to load up too much, and really the amount that we're generally getting is going to be fine, unless it's, you know, on the lower end. Talk with your care team, all that good stuff. All right, let's chat more about types of protein. We've talked about eggs. We've talked about meat. We've talked a lot about, you know, animal sources of protein, but we definitely have people that are wanting to be more plant-based. So let's get into it. What's the real difference between animal and plant protein, and should we pick sides?
Yep. So if you asked Jim this question, you know, 10 years ago, pre-doctorate in protein research, I would have probably said, oh yeah, you know, you got to go with the animal-based. Animal-based is superior, complete proteins. I have to tell you, the more I researched and the more I looked at it, I actually think the best balance is probably some of both. You know, we people talk about plant-based proteins not being complete. They're complete. Maybe they're deficient in certain amino acids, but I think the message that I like to talk to our, you know, vegan and vegetarian members about, and the communities that I speak to, is if you're eating a predominantly plant-based diet, which is fantastic, you probably want to bump up your target. So let's assume that you're at Virta and, you know, your target's 13 ounces or something around, you know, 90 grams. I would say if you're predominantly plant-based, you probably want to go up to maybe 13, 14, 15 ounces, probably, and making sure that you're getting at least that 13, but probably do a little bit better at 15. If you're thinking in grams and you're, you know, trying to get 90 to 100 grams, maybe you're going to 120 grams. What we realize about plant-based is, again, it was meant for the plant. It's tied up in fiber, and some of it's not digestible. We're just not able to access it as humans. So it just means we need a little bit more. But it's just, obviously, it's complete. It's really a beneficial protein source. And if you ask me, I always joke with people, I say I'm half carnivore, you know, just eating meat, I'm half vegan. I think, you know, if you want to really do well with protein, you want to get some protein from both. You know, things like seeds and nuts are fantastic sources of protein. Edamame are, you know, we get a lot of great plant-based proteins, and I think having some of both is really optimal. I do take issue with anybody that tells me that, you know, it should be all carnivore or all vegan. I think the research is pretty clear. Having a balance of both is going to be the best outcome.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I think we want to really try to avoid being polarizing. And not just being polarizing for the sake of not doing it, but I do think that it's beneficial to know that the research backs up that this balance is a good thing, because as we know, a lot of us, I don't think, are going to find it terribly sustainable to just adhere to all one or the other. Although some folks do that, and it's good to hear that you can still get the protein that you need, adequate protein for your, you know, what you want to do in your daily life. So help us, so thank you for helping us understand that, Jim. I want to talk about something that we had mentioned earlier. You were talking a little bit about protein shakes. So protein powders, protein bars, they're all over the place. Shakes, they're all over the place, right? What's the deal? Are they trendy extras, or do we actually need them? What's your take?
Yep. And I spent a lot of time on this topic and discussing this. A lot of people think, oh, you're a protein guy, you're a protein researcher. You must be really into shakes and supplements. And I say, for the most part, I'm not. I think they have a role to play, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, we all live lives, we all get busy, and we have kids and events and everything. And sometimes a shake is the best option we have. But food is always going to be a better choice. You know, I'm a big fan of Trader Joe's. You know, I would rather have Trader Joe's chicken or, you know, some of the beefs that they have than have a shake. But I think shakes have a role to play. Kind of what I mentioned before, if you just get a whey protein shake, which is the most popular, or even if you get a plant-based shake and it doesn't have any fat in it, you're going to be hungry. I have to tell you, I've done a tremendous amount of research on this. If I look at some of the research, when the results don't necessarily tie up with what we see, it's because, you know, when you drink calories, whether it's protein or fat, and it's just protein or you're just drinking the calories, it's less satisfying. It's less satiating. It's going to leave you full or satisfied for less time. So I think, you know, again, I think it's really important to make sure that if you're getting a whey protein shake, maybe you have a handful of nuts with it to try to get some extra fiber in there. You know, so maybe you have some macadamia or pecans or walnuts or something with that. The other thing too is the brain likes to chew. So, you know, drinking that while you have some nuts is really could be beneficial. But I think if you're going to be predominantly plant-based, I think shakes do make a lot of sense. You can get a lot more bang for your buck, especially if you're in a part of a low carb approach by using a shake. I probably wouldn't encourage doing more than one a day, but I think one a day could be beneficial for our vegan and vegetarian members. But I think at the end of the day, shakes are fine. I have a bit of a problem with bars because a lot of the bars are actually, you know, in a lot of ways, just like candy bars, they tend to have a lot of sugar and they tend to have net carbs, and they're putting literally, you know, nothing, you know, natural into those bars. So I'm a little bit careful about bars. There's not a lot that I typically like. I would reach out to your coach. We do have some bars and drinks that we prefer. I don't want to advertise anything on the call, but I think at the end of the day, reach out to your coach. But I do think they have a role, but I'm always trying to encourage people to go with the real food choice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there is, I like that you said there can be a rule, right? We obviously want to have whole foods whenever we can, but there's definitely a convenience factor. Or, you know, you're on the road all day long, you know, you're a truck driver and, you know, you can't stop to use a fork and a knife and cut up, you know, a ribeye, you know, having that protein shake or perhaps a bar that is going to be nutritionally adequate or works for your lifestyle could be a good option. In addition to some of our, you know, vegan or vegetarian members who are needing to kind of amp up their protein a little bit. So again, I love that message of it can work. Let's not make your entire diet protein shakes and protein supplements or overdo them. You know, if you're exercising, but they can be part of your, you know, daily routine. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Things like beef sticks can be a good option too. That's another option.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think a lot of our members, you know, pork rinds are really very nutrient dense, have a lot of protein in them. So, you know, again, we do have a lot of members that are truckers and I completely get it. And I think that, you know, a good quality protein shake that has that balance in there could be something. There's the difference between having that shake and stopping, you know, at a greasy spoon and having something, you know, that might be suboptimal.
Right. Good point. Hot topic going on right now. Actually, it's been going on for a while, but the topic of longevity and definitely, I think, too, as we start to get older, the collective, we start to get older. There's been a lot of talk about how much protein do we really need as we get older? Do we really need to eat a whole lot more protein? Is there anything to that? Does increasing your protein increase your longevity? Talk to us a little bit about that part.
Yep, absolutely. And this is a topic I obviously have been spending more time on each decade. You know, I think what's exciting is when I was in my 20s and my 30s, the best researchers were in their 20s and 30s. And then 30s and 40s, the best researchers. I'm like, wow, it's amazing. If you look at the top protein researchers, they're all between 40 and 60 years old. So I think this is an exciting time to look at protein's role in health span, in lifespan. And what we're realizing is that as we get older, we're not as able to process protein as much. And Virta's targets, we do take that into consideration, but you know, maybe if you're, you know, 60 or 70, maybe you need an extra ounce or two, and it's definitely something to speak to your coach about or your team about. But yes, as we get older, we definitely need more protein. The big challenge, Teresa, is that as we get older, it's more difficult to hit those protein targets, you know, when we're at 20, 30 and we're ravenous and we're eating. And then even as we get older, you know, maybe we got some dental issues that make it harder to chew. And then maybe, you know, we're not doing as much, you know, red meat. It is a challenge, but yes, 100%, as we get older, we need more protein. As we get older, we have a harder time utilizing the protein that we eat. So I think that, you know, it's definitely something that if we want to have health span, if you look at the number one determinant of lifespan and health span, it's actually grip strength. And it's like, wow, grip strength. Why grip strength? It's not that people are, you know, sitting there and they're living longer because they're squeezing those old spring-loaded devices. No, it's because people are actually picking up things. They're able to put their suitcase in the overhead bin. They actually have muscle. Muscle and strength is the number one determinant of longevity. And then also balance, making sure that we don't fall as we get older. We have all those risks of a fall, and being able to have strong hands, stable ankles, and have muscle to be able to grab yourself so you don't fall. All part of longevity, all ties in with protein. I will just say one other thing, because, you know, as you mentioned, I'm also, you know, a strength and conditioning coach. just eating more protein and not being active, not doing some type of resistance training, you really need the two go. They go hand in hand. And the resistance training is probably even a little bit more important. So coupling in, we have a new video that we produced that, you know, we can share, and I'm sure a lot of you've seen that our good coach, our good friend Mary did, just on doing some resistance training and that protein. You compile, you put that together, and you're really going to be able to stroke the health span fires.
Gotcha. So, you know, when I'm 70, drinking a bunch of protein shakes is not going to help me have better grip strength or be able to put my suitcase in the top compartment of the airplane or do any of those other activities, right? Prevent falls. I've got to stay active as well. I need to be supporting that intake of protein with some exercise, particularly strength training you mentioned. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think you make a great point. And something that's important, we are learning that we're able to put on muscle in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even maybe longer. We lose about 3-8% of our muscle each decade. And that's a big range. And I think it's an important range because let's assume that you're closer to that 3%, and then you lose 3% in your 40s, you lose 33% in your 50s, 60s, 70s. That's a very different number than 8% in your 40s, 8% in your 50s, 8% in your 60s. Yeah. So just being active, like you said, Teresa, having some resistance training, hitting your protein targets. And if you had decades of 3% versus 8%, that is going to mean a lot of, you know, better years, you know, be able to get off the floor after playing with your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren. I think that that's the exciting part is, you know, if you're 30, you want to be starting. The sooner we start, it's almost like a savings account. The sooner we start, but I'll tell you what, even if you're, you know, close to retirement, savings is still savings, the same thing. Even if you're in your 60s or your 70s and you start resistance training, plenty of evidence showing that there's going to be a benefit, but sooner is better, of course.
It's great to hear. Yeah. Never too late to start getting more protein, building more muscle. And I love how you also mentioned, you know, doing the things that you want to do. That's the whole point, is to live the kind of life that you want to live and be able to do the activities that you want to be able to do. So let's wrap up with one more question today, Jim. So for anyone listening who wants to use protein to get healthier, what's one thing or maybe two things that they should remember?
So I guess I'll save the best for last. If you ask me the most important thing that we're not doing around protein, it's breakfast protein. No doubt about it. We have a number of studies that see this. You know, the last thing we want to have is that breakfast cereal, even the oatmeal, the pancakes, the waffles, the muffins, the bagels. It's a double whammy. You get that blood sugar response that we're all quite aware of, but more importantly, there's no protein. You're breaking the fast. Breakfast is breaking the fast. Your muscles are literally eating themselves, begging you for protein. And what do? You give it sugar. And again, I don't want to get up on a box, but I think at the end of the day, breakfast protein, if you look especially women, but what happens is maybe people are hitting their protein target, but they're not getting enough for breakfast and they're getting an okay amount for lunch and then they're trying to load up in dinner. You can make up for a little bit of that, but nothing that we can do right now. And I'll tell you, probably 90, 95% of your listeners, Teresa, are not getting enough breakfast protein. So that's my big one. I'm always trying to encourage members, more breakfast protein. People say, oh, well, I had 2 eggs for breakfast, I'm good. No, you know, if you need 5 ounces of protein, around 35 grams, that's 5-6 eggs. I am not saying that you should eat 5 or 6 eggs. You can, I don't see any problem with that. But, you know, adding the eggs, adding some Canadian bacon, adding some cheese, maybe putting, you know, some pork rinds in, which are fun. I'm sure Teresa's done that more than a few times.
Oh, yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, breakfast protein is the one thing that if everybody on this call came away with one thing, that would be that one thing I'd like you to come across with. And I will tack on resistance training.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, that wraps up our protein power session with Jim. So Jim shared insights on how protein supports weight loss, keeps us full, and helped dispel some myths like that it's harmful for your kidneys. Turns out our kidneys like to work out too. We got clarity on protein needs for exercise, animal versus plant debate, and whether supplements are truly essential. Plus, we explored protein's role in longevity and staying strong as we age. In short, protein is a key player in health and wellness, and finding your balance can make a really big impact. So Jim, thank you for sharing your expertise. It's been a fantastic info-packed session.
Thank you, Teresa. Appreciate it.
All right. I hope to have you back on a podcast very soon. Have a good one.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. And if you'd like to regain control of your metabolic health and feel like yourself again, check us out at Virta.com. That's Virta.com. Your Life Reset is for informational purposes only and shouldn't be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Contact your provider if you suspect you have a medical problem. I'll chat with you all again soon. Until then, stay inspired, my friends.